It's Sunday, October 30th here in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. Coming up, U.S. Republicans and Democrats react very differently to new revelations about Democrat presidential nominee Hillary Clinton's emails. A U.S. scientist has insight into why Italy just suffered its fourth major earthquake in months. Can the Chicago Cubs baseball team keep alive its dream of a World Series title? And... we'll find out how scary clowns became a movie phenomenon in the U.S. It's all ahead on International Edition. Well, there are 9 days to go until the U.S. presidential election, and opinion polls show Democrat Hillary Clinton's lead over Republican Donald Trump is shrinking. Clinton's campaign was put on the defensive last Friday when U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director James Comey revealed that his team is conducting a new examination of her private emails while she served as Secretary of State. Comey's latest move was a big topic of conversation on the Sunday talk shows here in the U.S., and I asked our Senate correspondent Michael Bowman how the two main parties are reacting.
Well, Michael, Democrats are astonished, and Republicans can barely contain their glee. If you're a Democrat, such as Hillary Clinton's vice presidential pick, Tim Kaine, he was on the Sunday talk shows saying that this is unprecedented to have this kind of information revealed so close before an election on something that is currently being looked at, that this is an ongoing probe, an ongoing investigation, and for the FBI to be talking openly about this at all, let alone right before an election, is unprecedented.
It does seem that he has a point there, right? I mean, we haven't seen that kind of FBI revelation before, as far as I know.
Not that I'm aware of, at least not since I've been covering politics. The thing is that this is all a very special case, and a lot of this surrounds the director of the FBI, James Comey. James Comey came out in July with a very public statement, which was unusual in and of itself, basically saying that while Hillary Clinton was very careless in her handling of emails when she was President Obama's first Secretary of State, that there was nothing that warranted going forward with criminal charges against her. And so the thinking is that, number one, he had made the very unusual public statement in her favor. And now that new evidence, new information has come to light, he's somewhat obligated to take a similar step. The other thing is, what if this information came out right after the election? What would that look like for the FBI? Would it look like they were in fact covering for Clinton? So I think what we have are sort of a war of perceptions here.
Right. And Tim Kaine was saying, you know, these revelations are unprecedented, but some other members of the Clinton campaign have been a lot tougher in their comments about FBI Director Comey. What do you make of the really tough criticism of Comey that is coming from Hillary's camp right now?
Well, it's absolutely not surprising, considering that we are in the final heat of a presidential election cycle. James Comey was very much praised by the Clinton camp back in July when he all but exonerated her as far as criminal matters. Now we have this step taken where Hillary Clinton was anywhere from 7 to 12 points ahead in the polls a week ago. The polls have tightened. Now you have this additional revelation coming forward. The timing literally could not be worse. And if you are a member of her campaign and you've been working on this election for over a year, to have this come about, I think that the sense of frustration from a purely human level is somewhat understandable.
What can you tell from the way that Donald Trump's campaign has responded to these revelations? What is his strategy going forward in the last 9 days?
Well, Donald Trump has been saying all along that Hillary Clinton is corrupt, that she is not trustworthy, that you can't believe anything that comes out of her mouth. Interestingly enough, Donald Trump said that James Comey was corrupt back in July when he opted not to pursue charges against Hillary Clinton.
I think he said the other day that maybe the election isn't so rigged now.
I think that Donald Trump's perceptions of things very much depends on whether things are going in his favor or not. But look, this very much underscores what has been a central weakness of Hillary Clinton, that she is prone to missteps that would seem obvious to a lot of people that she should not have taken in the first place, and that there's a sense of drama always surrounding her candidacy for whatever she undertakes. And this very much plays into Donald Trump's hands. But look at it this way from the point of the election. There are millions of votes that have already been cast. Is this likely to change the vote of anyone who was already going to vote for Clinton? Probably not. Is it going to change the mind of anyone who is likely to vote for Trump? Probably not. Could it depress turnout? Possibly. But also, if there are Clinton supporters who feel that she is embattled, could it actually make the point that can Democrats go forward and say, you really need to turn out?
These are all questions that we have. And we all want to know the answers, right? But we'll only find out on election day itself, it seems.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much to Michael Bowman, our Senate correspondent, for bringing us up to date on these FBI revelations about Hillary Clinton's emails. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Well, on to another big story now from Europe. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi is promising to rebuild parts of central Italy damaged on Sunday by a 6.6 magnitude earthquake, Italy's most powerful in 36 years. No one was killed, but at least 20 injuries were reported and historic buildings were destroyed. It was the latest in a series of quakes to hit central Italy. American scientist Harley Benz has been following those quakes for the U.S. Geological Survey. My colleague Lori London spoke with Benz and asked him how damaging magnitude 6 quakes can be.
The rule of thumb is generally magnitude 6 or larger, and particularly in the built environment where people live, and particularly if they're shallow, we can expect damage. And you can also, in this area, the fact that it's been shaken by several magnitude 6s, many of these medieval structures are very weakened, so you don't actually have to have a magnitude 6 or larger earthquake to cause further damage. It's very vulnerable because of the number of weakened structures, also the age of the structures.
This is reportedly the largest quake in Italy since the 6.9 quake that struck southern Italy in 1980.
Yeah, and in fact, that earthquake was very similar to these. It was on the southern portion of the Apennine mountain belt. And so you have this beautiful mountain belt running up through the spine of Italy, and the geology is very similar the entire length of Italy along the Apennines. And so you can expect these relatively large earthquakes.
Is it pretty much a given now at this point with this large of a quake just occurring that there will be more aftershocks?
Yes. Typically these sequences can go on for weeks and months. Generally, the number of earthquakes will decrease in time, and the magnitude of the earthquakes will decrease. And so I can't tell you if this is going to lead to a bigger earthquake or not, but these magnitude 6s are typical for this area as being kind of the main shock. Now, is it unusual to have a series of magnitude 6s back-to-back like we've seen this? It's probably not atypical, but you have to keep in mind this is a very complicated area geologically. There are many faults involved here, or several faults involved, and so when you have one magnitude 6, it can load another fault that may be ready to go, and so you can generate another large earthquake. It's pretty complicated. What you can say is they're all certainly related geologically.
Well, that was Harley Benz of the U.S. Geological Survey speaking with International Edition's Lori London. Well, it's time to check about the buzz online with International Edition's G. Abby Lee. She's in the studio with today's trending stories. Hi, G.
Hi, Michael. Let's talk about the earthquake in Italy, like Harley mentioned. Its impact on the country's historical sites is simply devastating. An account called History of Italy tweeted, "The Cathedral of Santa Maria, Argentina, has been destroyed by today's earthquake." Hashtag PrayForItaly is trending at this hour, and the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Consular Affairs sent out multiple tweets urging Americans traveling in Italy to notify their loved ones of their safety on social media.
Well, it's nice that social media still play a big role in connecting people
right,
in times of trouble
ever.
Like this. I also heard something about a special pumpkin carving contest. What's trending on social media with that?
Right. So there's a disclaimer, though, because if you feel like an underachiever, hearing about the competition at the U.S. Space Agency NASA is definitely going to make you feel worse. An engineer at NASA shared several photos of the competition on Twitter, and his handle is @YazzySays. If you want to check them out for yourself, he began with this tweet. Goodness gracious people, the annual at NASA JPL pumpkin carving competition entries were incredible. Ready to see some? #NASAPumpkin. NASA JPL stands for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and of course there was a space telescope pumpkin, a Pac-Man pumpkin, and some election-themed pumpkins. That's all for me today. Michael?
Thanks, G. I really do want to check those pumpkins out. If you want to follow G on Twitter, you can find her at @GAbbyLee. I'm @Michael_Lippin, and you can follow our show as well at @VOA_IE. Here are some of the top stories now on VOAnews.com. Scores killed as Syrian rebels battle to break Aleppo siege. Saudi Arabia says attack on World Cup soccer qualifier is foiled. Baghdad bombings kill 17 people and wound 60. EU and Canada sign a long-delayed trade deal. And Somali troops recapture village from al-Shabaab Islamist militants. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com. This is International Edition. Well, we're just a few hours away from a very big baseball game here in the U.S. It's Game 5 of the World Series between the Chicago Cubs and the Cleveland Indians, two teams that haven't won the title since the first part of the 20th century. The Indians lead the best-of-seven series by 3-1. The Cubs have lost both of the last two games at their home at Wrigley Field. VOA's Kane Farabaugh has been at Wrigley Field, and as he reports, expectations, ticket prices are very high as baseball fans descend on the city for the historic series.
The World Series at Wrigley Field in Chicago is one of the hottest tickets in the sports universe.
This is the biggest sporting event in this century in America.
Northwestern University professor Bill Savage, who teaches classes on baseball literature and history, says because it hasn't happened in 71 years,
World Series program here.
The cost to watch the games in person has soared.
These are the highest resale ticket prices in sport history.
Let's just say I paid north of $2,000. That was yesterday. I'm told they've increased by $1,000 since then.
And Bruce Bohr's ticket price isn't even the most expensive.
More than worth their weight in gold. And that's why there's a lot of counterfeiters and scalpers out there, too.
For some fans with tickets, there was a choice to make. Sell them for a large profit.
Very good.
Thank you.
These are going for about 15 to 20 times what their face value.
Or use them for what could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Never thought of selling any of these games. This is the whole point.
The chance for Danny and David Spitz to attend these games came 5 years ago when David was offered season tickets, giving him access to postseason tickets at face value. He formed a group to buy them that included his sister Marissa, who spoke to VOA via Skype.
And I said, yeah, we have to. Let's do it. This is going to be a lifetime investment because we're going to do this and we're going to be able to go to the playoffs and go to Wrigley for the World Series whenever they make it.
But now that the moment is finally here, Marissa Spitz is not.
I'm in the Middle East, very far away from Chicago without even a remote possibility of being able to go back for it.
Spitz is serving a deployment with the U.S. Army, supporting Operation Inherent Resolve, and says what's worse than missing the games is not being around other Cubs fans.
I'm sad I'm not there, but I'm also more sad that I'm alone watching these games.
But she is at Wrigley in spirit, says her brother Danny, who used her ticket to the game.
We're talking all game during the game. We're texting back and forth during the whole game. She's awake. She's watching it at 4 a.m, 3 a.m. And we're complaining, we're bitching, we're excited. It's just the same thing we do if we're here.
Her brother David says she will be here next time.
They keep achieving new milestones every year. So if they don't win this year, we feel like they'll be back again. She'll be here to take part of that moment with us.
A moment the Spitz family and Cubs fans around the world hopes happens more than once every 71 years. Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
Well, the Cubs have one more game against the Indians at Wrigley Field later this evening, and they face a must-win situation. I spoke to our sports editor Park Brewer a short time ago and wanted to know how big a challenge the Cubs are facing.
Well, Michael, this is a huge challenge. This is a team that had the best record in all of Major League Baseball this year, and everybody thought this would be the team that was going to be World Series champions for the first time since 1908. The last time a team has come back from a 3-1 deficit has been a very long time. It's not easy to do. And
especially when your last two games would have to be away
in Cleveland, and the reason that is, for those who don't know, is that the All-Star game in Major League Baseball is the one major professional sports league where that something is determined there, and the team that wins that All-Star game gets home field advantage. So the American League won that game in July, and that enabled Cleveland to have four of the scheduled seven games on their home field. Now, if the Cubs lose in this game five, it won't even go back to Cleveland, but it's certainly a huge advantage for the Indians.
Well, how would you, rate the performance of these two teams, the Cubs and the Indians, so far in this series?
Well, I think the most thrilling game was the 1-0 game on Friday night. That was a pivotal game. It was the first game at Wrigley Field in the World Series in Chicago since 1945. And the fans were not just inside the stadium. They filled the streets outside of the stadium before this game. And it was just an incredible duel, and not just between the hitters and the pitchers, but between the managers and how they managed that game. So that, to me, was the best game of the series so far.
Well, speaking of being down 3-1 in a series, the Cleveland Cavaliers, Cleveland's NBA basketball team, was down 3-1 in the NBA Finals earlier this year, and then they came back to win 3 in a row and win the series. So I'm wondering, could the Chicago Cubs take some inspiration from how, the hometown of their rivals did in the basketball series earlier this year?
Well, it can be done. Of course, Cleveland in that series was the underdog as well. This time it's the favorite that's behind 3-1. But certainly, it can be done. You never say never. And, of course, baseball is unlike other sports. It doesn't have a clock. It's not decided until the final out. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I know all the Cubs fans are going to be on the edge of their seats hoping they can win this game and get it to Cleveland.
Exactly. Well, let's see what happens. Thank you so much to our sports editor, Park Brewer.
My pleasure, Michael.
This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The final bits of data gathered by NASA's New Horizons spacecraft during its July 2015 flyby of Pluto were received this week by its Mission Operations Center at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Maryland. More than 50 gigabytes of observational data was stored on the spacecraft's digital recorders since the flyby. The data has been sent back to Earth in increments over a 15-month period. Mission officials say part of an observation sequence of Pluto and its largest moon, Charon, were included in the final data feed. Traveling at light speed, the data made the nearly 50 billion kilometer trip in about 5 hours. After conducting a final verification of all received data, mission team members will clear space on the spacecraft's digital recorders to make room for new data that will be gathered in its upcoming exploration of the Kuiper Belt. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. A creepy clown craze has taken America by storm in recent months, triggered by phantom clown sightings across the country. Similar sightings happened in the 1980s and 90s. Since then, no one has capitalized on the fear of clowns more than the movie industry, as Penelope Pulu reports.
They're here.
Who can forget the original Poltergeist? Directed by Tobe Hooper and written by Steven Spielberg, the 1982 horror flick became a classic for its unprecedented storyline and chilling atmosphere in a quaint suburb where restless ghosts haunt the house of a middle-class family and kidnap one of the children. In one of the most unnerving scenes, a creepy toy clown comes to life. The scary clown is embodied by Batman's arch-nemesis, the Joker, who wreaks havoc in Gotham City. The first time the character appeared on TV was about 50 years ago, but Jack Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker was more menacing in the 1989 film as he taunted Batman and planned to poison thousands of civilians. The same role was reprised even more memorably by the late Heath Ledger in Chris Nolan's 2008, The Dark Knight.
Hi.
Nolan and Ledger go a step further in depicting the evil clown. The Joker no longer hides behind the jovial clown mask or heavy makeup. His face is mutilated into a contorted clown grimace. That vision has inspired other more twisted interpretations of evil clowns. One of them is the 2016 horror film Clown. To entertain his son's birthday party, a father dons a clown suit he finds in his attic, only to discover he cannot take it off. The dad loses his mind and turns murderous as the suit starts growing into his skin.
Two.
The recently released Tyler Perry's Boo, a Madea Halloween, incorporates the scary clown theme but infuses it with humor by portraying the mishaps of Madea, a big busty woman, as she faces up to ghouls and clowns while keeping a watchful eye on teens during Halloween. So whether it is the supernatural mask of evil or a mere mortal with evil intentions, the creepy clown persona taps into our fears of the unnatural, which has us screaming in fear and coming back for more.
What are you doing down there, Daddy?
Come downstairs. I want to see my number one birthday boy.
Penelope Vipulu, VOA News, Washington.
That's VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Women's rights in the ASEAN member states have seen significant progress in the last 5 years, said United States Ambassador to the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, Nina Hachigian. Speaking at the opening dinner inaugurating U.S.-ASEAN Women's Leadership Academy for the Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative in Jakarta, Indonesia, on October 17th, the ambassador noted, "Data shows that there has been greater access to education, an increase in life expectancy, and a decrease in women dying during childbirth. More women in Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, and the Philippines are enrolling in higher education programs. That said, many obstacles remain that are preventing women's equal participation in and benefit from ASEAN economic growth and development. The empowerment of women, she said, is an important development issue. According to the International Labor Organization, women's work, both paid and unpaid, may be the single most important poverty-reducing factor in developing economies," said Ambassador Hachigian. "Studies have repeatedly shown that women are more likely to invest a large proportion of their household income in the education of their children, increasing opportunities for the next generation. It's not that men don't care for their families. They do. But men dedicate less of their wages to their children's health and education than women do. Similar benefits come from increasing women's access to education. Educated women are better at managing their own and their families' health issues, thereby reducing infant and maternal mortality, as well as health care costs. A study using data from 219 countries from 1970 to 2009 found that for every one additional year of education for women of reproductive age, child mortality increased by nearly 10%. Ambassador Hachigian cited a recent UN Women report that concluded that in the Asia-Pacific region alone, removing barriers to full participation of women in the workforce could boost GDP by $89 billion U.S. dollars every year. It's clear when societies engage, train, and invest in women, the broader community benefits, she said. So for all these reasons, one of my top priorities as U.S. Ambassador to ASEAN is to promote opportunities for women in ASEAN. As we would say in the U.S., it's a no-brainer, meaning it's the obvious choice."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.